In the last year and a half to 2 years, we've heard a lot about economic issues, haven't we? You know, even this last week, there was unemployment stuff that came out. I think last spring, we heard word about an incentive package. We've heard of bailouts or buyouts. We've heard of stock market swaps. We've heard of housing bubbles, unemployment numbers, stock market, bond market, mortgage crisis, subprime this, subprime that. I mean, most of it I don't get. But it keeps coming at us, doesn't it? I mean, even this last week, as we celebrated the wonderful, you know, people we are to be able to vote and have an election, that stuff kept coming at us. But you know what they say, don't you? If everything is coming your way, you're probably in the wrong line. And you ought to get out. I wonder if, in who we are as a people, as we think about who we are and what we try to achieve in our lives and the direction we are going, if perhaps we haven't lined up in the wrong line and are making our way ahead to try to get something, achieve something, or be somewhere that isn't the best for us, or perhaps is destructive for us. I wonder, even as we as followers of Jesus Christ, as we have talked about issues of finance and greed and avarice and things in our world, you know, we work against that stuff, we work at that in our life, if still, sometimes we haven't lined ourselves up in that line. And that stuff keeps coming at us because we're in the wrong line. We're in the wrong place. We're looking for the wrong thing in our life. What does it mean for us to truly be followers of Jesus Christ? In the letter to Paul, that Paul writes to the church this morning, he tells them, you know, don't buy into the hollow philosophies of the world around you. Don't buy in, don't believe, don't live out of the human traditions and the principles of this world. Instead, look to the ways of Jesus Christ. And then he tells them in chapter 3 of this letter, love each other like nobody's business. Do what you need to do to be a community of love and grace. And as I think about who we are as a people, are we in that line? Are we in that line to build church, to build loving community, to build the people who Jesus touches, and from our hands, from our heart, and from our mouth come the kind of love that Christ has shown us? You know, in these times of struggle that we have, in these times of difficulty, I am convinced in the deepest part of my heart that in our society and in our world, the world is ripe for the church to be the church. The world is ripe. The harvest is plentiful for people who know who Christ is and know what God is about, to show love in clear and solid ways and to build community, to put love together, so that we might touch each other and those around us in our world. In the gospel lesson today, we hear that wonderful story of some men who have a friend who's a paralytic. He can't walk. They bring him to Jesus knowing that Jesus can do something about this. Jesus can help him. They can't get through the crowd because the crowd is so big. So what do? You know, these guys are nutcases, aren't they? They're standing outside the house. The crowd's all around the house, and they turn to each other and say, Joe, let's take him up on the roof. And Joe says, are you nuts? You know how hard that's going to be to lift him up there? You know how dangerous that might be if one of us fall off? But they do it anyway because they love their friend. They get up on the roof and they say, what are we going to do now? Well, let's tear the roof open so we can lower him down. And Joe says, what, are you nuts? Can you imagine the lawsuit that's going to come from that? We're all going to be in litigation for years because I'm sure they had lawyers back then, just like we have lawyers now. That's crazy. And yet, they love him so much, they tear up a roof and risk ridicule, risk legal action. And they says, well, we got to lower him down. Lower him down? He's heavy. Are you kidding? I'm going to throw out my back. I'm going to hurt myself. And yet they lower him down. And Jesus pronounces forgiveness, and Jesus pronounces healing. And we see a miracle, but I don't think the miracle is the healing or the forgiveness. You know, if God's going to do that, God's going to do that. So big deal. I think the miracle is that these friends say, we love him so much, we're going to take him, we're going to be part of his life, we're going to help him where he needs to be helped. And I think there's something to learn in that for us. As we live in this world that is very market-driven, do you know what I'm talking about? As we live in this world that has preached and has lived and has encouraged consumerism to the point where we say what is good for our society is to buy something, even if you don't need it. We live in a world that perhaps is standing in the wrong line, where It's community. It's grace. And using who we are and what we are and what we have for those ways of love and possibility and hope into this broken world. What does it mean for us to get in a new line and to be able to help those, be part of a loving community? Reverend Tex Sample, who I've shared stories with you many times, he's a retired Methodist pastor and a professor. And he tells a story about when he first started pastoring. He's retired now, and he was in college in the late 50s. And his senior year in college, he decided he wanted to be a pastor. So he went to the district superintendent and did all the stuff he needed to do. And they asked him, senior year, would you go pastor a small country church, much like we have on the screen today? Would you go pastor a small country church on weekends, go in Saturday, do a little visitation, do their service, hospital calls, all that? And Tex said, sure, I'd be glad to do that. I remember late 50s. So he'd go to college, and on Saturday he'd drive out and do a nice little service for this nice little country church. Well, one of his first weekends there, a woman, a Miss Anna, who stood about 5 feet tall, came up to Tex, who was 6'4", and played college baseball, a strong, rugged guy. Miss Anna came up to him, and he said, "Tex, Reverend, do you visit people who aren't members of the church?" And Tex said, "Sure, I'll be glad to do that. Just tell me their address, I'll find it, and I'll go visit them." And Miss Anna said, "Well, you know, I better go with you just to show you the way, but also to make sure it's okay. Because the last time that a preacher went out to see Aunt Betsy, you know, my friend, she chased him away with a butcher knife." So he thought that was interesting. And so he said, "Okay, you can take me out." So the next Saturday, he drives into town, and Miss Anna meets him at the church, and they drive out to Aunt Betsy's place, Miss Anna's friend. Miss Anna, who stood about 5 feet tall, says, "You stay in the car and let me go see if it's okay." 6'4" guy and 5 foot. So she goes in to make sure this big strapping baseball player is going to be okay. She walks in, she goes into the house, she comes out and she finally says, "Come on in." And so Tex knew it was okay. He gets out of the car and he starts walking through the front yard, but he realizes he has to be a little careful. Because not only does Aunt Betsy live there, but a whole set of cats, dogs, and other critters are residents of this place. And they have left stuff in the front yard, if you know what I'm talking about. As he walks and avoids that in the front yard, he walks up on the front porch and he realizes that these cats, dogs, and critters aren't just restricted to the front yard, that they've deposited some things on the front porch. And as he walks into the house, he sees it's a dirt floor and all around the house. And he thought the only one going to the outhouse was Aunt Betsy, because the critters had been in there doing their business as well. He walks in, sees the stuff on the floor, sees trash on the floor, sees dirty dishes in the sink. And then he meets Aunt Betsy. And as he goes up to meet her, he looks at her. And Aunt Betsy's about 80 years old, he said. But you could tell that in her, you know, from her facial features and the way she carried herself, that when she was young, she had to be just a beautiful young woman. But Aunt Betsy comes to him and hugs him. And he realizes she hadn't bathed for a while. But also he smelled shoe polish and saw just chunks of shoe polish in her hair from where she tried to color her hair. He sits down across from her, and Aunt Betsy starts to talk to her, and he's not listening initially because he looks at her hands, and she has dirt caked in between her fingers. And she has dirt caked in the folds of her neck. But they talk for a while, and Aunt Betsy says, "Reverend, I apologize. I haven't been to hear you preach in church yet." And he said, "That's okay." And they talked for a half hour. It seemed to go well. No cutlery, no butcher knives came out. So things seemed to be fine. And she said, I'll be in church." And Tex said, "That'd be great." So they went back to the car. And Tex said, "You know, Miss Anna, can you tell me a little bit about Aunt Betsy?" And she said, "Well, you know, a long time ago, Aunt Betsy was one of the most beautiful girl ladies in the county. She was gorgeous. And there was a young farmer who he really took a shine to her, a liking, for those of you who don't know what shine is. He took a shine to her. He really liked her. And so they dated for a while and they got married. And he loved her dearly. But he didn't let her know anything about the money or how the farm worked. He didn't let her know about, you know, how things went on. He kind of protected her and wouldn't let her do things. Now, he loved her, Pastor. Don't get me wrong. But as happened, he come his early 50s and he passed away. And Aunt Betsy was just lost. She was broken. She didn't know what to do. And she didn't know what to do with her money and the farm. She had no idea because she had not learned." And Miss Anna said she struggled along for a couple years until another young man from out of town came in and met Aunt Betsy and swept her off her feet. And they got married, and this young man convinced her to sell all she had and make a new start. Let's go out west, he said, from the southern Mississippi farmland is where it was. Let's go out west and make a new start. So they sold everything they had. They went out west, and in 6 weeks, Aunt Betsy was back by herself. And that young man had taken her for everything she had. And Miss Anna said, when Betsy came back, she just wasn't the same then. It was like she was crazy, she said. But she was still a friend. Well, Aunt Betsy started coming to church. And Aunt Betsy would sit with Miss Anna, and she just seemed to be pleased to be in church, sitting with folks from church. She said, text said she hung on every word he said. And things went well for a while until about 4 or 5 weeks later. And Tex comes into town Saturday, and Miss Anna's there to meet him at the church. And Miss Anna said, Tex, you're not going to believe what happened. Miss Betsy, we don't know why, but Miss Betsy just started walking one evening. And she walked her way about 6 miles and found her way to a bar. And again, this is late 50s in southern Mississippi. She found her way to an African-American bar where segregation was clear back then. She found her way there, and she went in. And the folks at the bar weren't sure what to do with her. You know, they didn't want to say no. She stepped up to the bar and she sat down and they served her. And she drank. And again, they didn't want to rile her. They didn't want to get in trouble for anything. But she drank into the night until finally they could convince her they'll take her home. And so they take her outside. They load her in the back of a pickup truck. And as people, as Anna said, when Miss Betsy was going home, she was standing up in that pickup truck just singing with an African-American man driving. In those days, in that time, that just wasn't right. And they knew she had issues anyway. So the family that she had and the friends that they had, they committed her to an asylum to be evaluated. Well, Tex wasn't sure what to do then. He let it go, kept on preaching. But about 6 weeks later, he gets a call from the director of the asylum. And the director says, you know, Reverend Betsy is here, Aunt Betsy or whatever her last name was, and she's ready to go home, and she wants you to come pick her up. And Tex said, you know, I'm the pastor. You need to call her family, because she had a nephew in the area. You need to call her family, and he says, well, we've called their family, and they won't come get her. They want her to stay. They won't come get her, and she wants you to come and pick her up. So Tex agreed to do that. He went and got her, took her home, did church service, came back next Saturday, and guess who shows up? Miss Anna. Tex, you're not going to believe what's happened. Is the folks in the community are trying to freeze Aunt Betsy out. She goes to the grocery store, and they won't give her credit to buy food. And she always paid her bill, but they won't give her credit, and they won't even get her food. And Tex said he got ticked off. He said he stole the sermon that he had heard before. Put his own twist on it and got in the pulpit that Sunday with a sermon title that said, if there's something wrong with your neighbor, it's you that's the fault. And he said with all the self-righteousness he could, you know, that nasty self-righteousness we all know, with all the self-righteousness he could muster, he preached to that congregation and he gave him what for. And at the end of that sermon, he knew he had done something wrong and he was convinced he was going to get fired. So he left. Next Saturday, he comes back, and guess who shows up? Miss Anna. And Miss Anna said, Tex, you're not going to believe what's happened. The people of the church went to Aunt Betsy's house, and they took her away from there and took her to a new house with a wood floor. She's got credit at the store. In fact, she can even buy cigarettes now. They took her in. He went out to talk to Aunt Betsy and said, Pastor, I can't believe it. The church people did this all for me. I got credit at the store, and they'll even let me charge cigarettes. I couldn't do that before. Now, footnote, don't smoke. It's a bad thing. But they'll even let me do that. And she was as pleased as punch. They had taken her in. And things seemed to be okay. About 4 or 5 weeks later, it seems to go 4 or 5 week stretches, Tex is in church preaching. Miss Anna's there, Miss Betsy's right beside him. And suddenly Tex says, you know, as I'm getting into my sermon, suddenly there's a smell, a really bad smell, which wasn't unusual. The small country church was in the middle of pasture land. You know how that works, right? You know, cows and all, it just whops in sometimes. But he said it wasn't that. It was something else. And it was fierce. It appears that Aunt Betsy had some stomach trouble from the flu or something she ate, and she had a major accident. And she's sitting there watching Tex preach. And Miss Anna, who obviously knows what's going on, sitting beside her and trying to get her to go out. Let's go take care of things. Let's get out. And Aunt Betsy says, you know, quiet. Listen to the preacher. You know, shut up. Listen to the preacher. Which is always good advice. But she won't move. And no, Tex finishes the sermon, but he's convinced nobody's hearing anything else because what they can smell. It's not a good smell. Service ends. He goes in back and he's convinced something's going to happen now. He's convinced that he's in trouble now. You know, what did she do in church? In church. In the pew. And he, if he's confused about what happened, Aunt Betsy comes right up to him and hugs him dearly. And he knows clearly what she did then. And this big, tall farmer, who was kind of a leader in the church, he watched this big, tall farmer who was bigger than him. Broad guy, huge hands. He got in the back of the line to shake hands. He comes up to Tex, and Tex said, you know, I knew it was over then. I knew who was going to say to me, you know, just don't come back next Sunday. He talked us into it. And look what she did. But instead, this preacher grabbed his hand and shook it firmly and said, preacher, you don't worry about Aunt Betsy. She's ours. And we know that now. We know that now. Tex said he looked outside of the church. One of the men had backed up a pickup truck. Four men, one on each limb. The ones who held her feet had gloves on, if you know what I mean. They gently loaded her into the pickup truck, drove her down to the creek, and the ladies of the church washed her up. And the ladies of the church washed her up. After service, Tex said, you know, he still thought he might be on thin ice, so he went out to see Aunt Betsy. And he said, Aunt Betsy, you know, if you're ever in church and you need to leave, it's okay. You don't have to stay there. And she said, preacher, I'm never going to leave that church. And I don't know if you understand. You know, if you ever need to leave, it's okay, even in the middle of the sermon. You can leave the church. And she says, preacher, I'm never going to leave that church. And he tries again and says, you know, Aunt Betsy, I know you love me. We've been through a lot together. We're okay together. But you can walk out if you want to. It's not a big deal. And she said, preacher, it's not about you. It's about those people. They love me. And they care for me. And I ain't never going to leave that church. Tex said that was the last discussion he had with her. But everything was fine then. They took her in. They took care of her. And that's church. The line they're standing in is about caring and loving each other. And I think those good people, like us, good people, sometimes forget that. And we get in the wrong line. And we get sold out by the philosophies and the hollow traditions of the world around us. And forget who we are. We live in a world in which we have seen recently the line we stand in, or the line some stand in, or the line we all fight to get out of. The line where there is a desire for monetary gain of individuals and groups in such a way that has pushed our system to hardship and even crisis. And there is a need. There is a dramatic, desperate need to relearn and to learn what it means to be community and church. There is a dramatic and a drastic need within our community to learn and to relearn what freedom means. A freedom not based on if you can afford it, you should buy it, or acquiring of capital. But a freedom that's based on the great nation that we are, with a common purpose that says we are about neighbor and loving each other. And Christ speaks to that today. We are called to learn and relearn the freedom of what it means to be the church of Jesus Christ. And get this, to lead our families, to lead our neighborhoods, to lead our institutions, and I believe to be a leading light in our communities and our nation in the ways of love and grace. Because if the church doesn't do it, who's going to? Who's going to? Who's going to take care of the Aunt Betsy's? It's not the philosophies of the world. You won't find that kind of care in a mall. You won't find that kind of care in a stock market, even though they have their purpose. But you can find it in the church. And that's who we are. Earlier in the service, do you remember the prayer time? I asked you to think of somebody. Did you remember that? Now, if you've got a memory like mine, you probably forgot already. But I'm guessing you can remember them again. This week, I want you just to do an act of grace for them. I don't care what it is. It doesn't have to be drastic. It doesn't have to be, you know, go to church and do this, you know, do this great mission trip. No, no, no. Do an act of grace. Do an act of compassion. Do an act of love. Because it will make all the difference in the world. And it won't just be for them, but it'll be for you. And things won't keep coming at you. But you can move with love and grace. Do an act of grace. Introduce them to Jesus in that way. Even if they don't know who and what you are on Sunday morning, introduce them to Jesus with that love. And the world will not be the same. Do it. Love. And be who Christ calls us to be. Let's bow for prayer. Loving God, we thank you for all that you have given us, but especially we thank you for communities of grace. We thank you for touching us here in this place that we might have a room, a place, a sanctuary to worship and praise you, to hear your word for our life, but also to receive what it means to be your disciples and to share love as we receive love. So touch each of our hearts this day, and as we have thought of somebody, strengthen us in the ways of love and grace and compassion that we might reach out and give an act of love and grace to those we know. All this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.